Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello. It has been a little while since we've talked to you guys. This is Megan Cloherty and Jack Moore.
Hi.
Coming from WTOP Studios. And we told you we'd bring you a break in the case if there was one. So we have one. We just learned today that Darren Wendt has lost his appeal and he will not get a retrial. And so today, because of the circumstances we just found out, this is going to be a more informal podcast where Jack and I kind of talk about what the decision says, what this means, maybe give a tiny bit of a recap so we can all get our heads around this thing. But Jack, the last time we were here was
when Darren Wendt's defense team filed the appeal.
I don't even remember.
So that was December of 2020 or January of 2021. And so kind of the basis of the appeal is a little complicated legally, but it can be boiled down to basically Darren Wendt's defense attorneys wanted to call an additional witness at the trial.
Yep.
And kind of the way the trial played out is, the prosecution goes first, then the defense gets a chance to put on its case, and that's when Darren took the stand. And, of course, he blames his brothers. That was his defense. Then the prosecution gets another crack during rebuttal, and that's where they put Darrell Wendt on the stand and spent some time basically trying to provide an alibi for him. That's when we learned that Darrell was in Gaithersburg, according to the evidence, that he was buying a pizza of his own with Garnett and having it with his kids. And also when we learned of the infamous Haters Hate video.
Watch them haters hate. Take it back. I'm so glad today. Every time I hit the streets, I bet the freaks cooperate. Yes, yes, you know they call me Mr. Mode. I do not contemplate. I see, I want, I cry, I get that just the way I operate.
Which was uploaded to YouTube on May 13th, 2015, which is when the Savopoulos family and Vera Figueroa were taken hostage on Woodland Drive.
So basically it gave Darrell an alibi that he was there and everyone remembered him being there.
Exactly. And so then after that happened, the prosecution rests its case. And in that phase of the trial, the defense has also rested its case. They wanted to call an additional witness, a woman named Ikea Williams, who lived at the house in Gaithersburg with Anthony Anderson. And she would have, her testimony, according to the grand jury, may have weakened Darrell's alibi somewhat. Because she testified in the grand jury that whenever Darrell stopped by, he always called or texted. Mm. And the problem is, in the call records, there's no evidence, there's no calls or texts on May 13th, 2015. There is some calls and texts on May 19th. So the defense was saying, isn't it more likely that the day Darrell went to Gaithersburg and watched the Haters Hate video was May 19th, 6 days after the killings? So the defense wanted to introduce this as evidence to undercut Darrell's alibi. But the judge ended up saying, no, you could have called Ikea Williams during your case. And, at this point in time, the trial had been going on for almost 6 weeks, lengthy time. And, having the defense call another witness or other witnesses after the rebuttal, this would have been then a surrebuttal, which is not unheard of, but it's uncommon. And so the judge said, no, you already had your chance and we're moving right along to closing arguments.
And Judy Pipe, who is the defense attorney, you all will remember, she basically made the argument during all of this that was not happening in front of the jury. It was just the attorneys and the judge and us, the gallery. But she was basically saying Ikea Williams' name was on the prosecution's rebuttal list. So she thought she was going to be able to do a cross-examination against Ikea Williams, right? So she was very surprised. And again, it really doesn't make sense why she didn't call her in the first place. But that was her argument to the judge. Like, oh, it looked like they were going to call her, so I didn't. And then she never got her chance to have her on the stand.
Exactly. And then, but the judge said no, moved along with the trial. But that became the basis for the appeal.
Yes.
In the oral arguments before D.C. Court of Appeals, which is the district's highest court for local matters, not, you know, federal cases or federal trials, the oral arguments were in March of this year. And those are interesting to watch, but, you know, kind of at a higher level, you know, they're highly legalistic and, you know, it's just the judges and the lawyers arguing, you know, kind of arcane points of law. So watching those, you know, it was hard for us to figure out which way they're swaying. You know, we don't know. We can't figure out some of the time what they're even arguing about. But and then you wait after that point.
For a long time, by the way.
Exactly. The Court of Appeals, you know, has a lengthy caseload, and sometimes it can be a year or more after they hear oral arguments to when they issue an opinion. And the only way to really know is there's a website where they post all of their opinions, and you just have to go there and periodically visit and refresh the page and see if anything has popped up, which is exactly what happened today.
And you guys know Jack did this, of course, our detail-oriented superstar here. So you double-checked, and it came down today, and this is about noonish, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going to get into a little bit of what the decision says, because it is kind of legalese, but also we want to really give you guys a sense for the panel's wording on their decision. So what was interesting to me, Jack, was that in denying him the appeal, they also acknowledged that he should have been able to have, or Judy Pipe should have been able to have a surrebuttal.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's kind of two different parts to the decision. So they say, like, no new trial, but
the court kind of did err, if you will, when it came to this. Let's pull the quote. I think there's a quote like in the very top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe this is a good place to take a break while we find that.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Welcome back, guys. So we found the exact quote we wanted to pull for you from the Court of Appeals decision. It said, quote, "The weight of other overwhelming evidence against the appellant," which is Wendt, "rendered any error by the trial court in denying surrebuttal harmless." And what is that evidence, just to remind people?
So there is the DNA on the crust of the half-eaten pizza, Domino's pizza, that was delivered to the house while the victims were being held hostage. Right. There's the DNA on the construction vest found in Amy Savopoulos's burned-out Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
There is a hair found upstairs in the bedding in the bedroom where the victims were restrained and held hostage. And then there's a hair found in the hard hat in the garage. And then there's also the kind of incriminating searches on his phone.
Right.
You know, searches for the crime, the fire on Woodland Drive, and then things like, you know, hideout cities for fugitives, how to beat a lie detector. So that was, you know, kind of the evidence that they call overwhelming. That was some of the evidence they cited.
And the like dark time when Darren's phone had no activity at all because it had to be connected to Wi-Fi. And it happened to be during the time of the murders. And it's interesting because this thing is about 40 pages, the decision, and they really do synopsize the trial for us. I mean, we could have used this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so in going back to that idea of there kind of like two ideas here, you know, they do really seem to come down on the idea that the defense should have had the chance for a surrebuttal. They disagree. You know, for example, one of the reasons why the judge denied the chance for a surrebuttal was that IKEA Williams' testimony was equivocal, meaning it wasn't, you know, it was kind of maybe, sort of. And
it wasn't a smoking gun, essentially.
Exactly. And the appeals court says we disagree that Williams was too, quote, equivocal for her testimony to squarely meet and question the Gaithersburg alibi. Williams' testimony made it less probable that Durrell had visited Gaithersburg on May 13th. This evidence should have gone to the jury. But, you know, and then on the other hand, you know, they say, so the jury should have heard this. That's true. But on the other hand, look at this other, all of this other evidence
It wouldn't have made the difference, essentially.
Exactly.
So now that Darren Wint knows that this is over, where is he now, and is this the end for him?
So I think at last check, he is in a federal prison in Illinois. Mm. And I think, you know, in terms of the appeals process, this was the kind of the major route, the major avenue for an appeal. And this is now over. You know, I think for prisoners, for people convicted of crimes, there are other kinds of post-conviction appeals that can happen over the years. But this, you know, kind of is the main avenue right out of the gate to get a new trial has been totally shot down.
It's a case that really dominated so many lives, obviously including the victims and their families. But the Wints, all these reporters and people who covered it and worked on the case. So it's really, it feels like the end of a chapter. And since this is such an informal conversation, Jack, it's been a huge part of our like last 4 years. We started this thing 4 years ago.
Indeed, yeah.
And you still remember almost every detail. So I just wanted to thank you. And then thank the listeners who have, we still are getting questions and stuff every once in a while. So if you guys have any questions about this episode, we'd be happy to answer them for you if you want to email us or hit us up on Twitter. But thank you for coming along this journey with us. And it seems like this is the end of this 22-hour podcast. Thanks for being here. 22 Hours, an American Nightmare was written, edited, and produced by Jack Moore and me, Megan Cloherty. Julia Ziegler is our content advisor. If you like our podcast, you can give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or leave us a review. It helps other listeners find us. And head to 22HoursPodcast.com where you can leave us any questions or contact us on Twitter at 22HoursPod. Music for this episode, of course, is Haters Hate by Ramon Messam. 22 Hours, an American Nightmare is a production of WTOP News in Washington, D.C.